Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our program. We're off and running on a brand new week, Monday, June 24th, 2024. Yes, up at the Buckmaster Bungalow, we got rain. Oh, my goodness. 3 inches on our rain gauge in 90 minutes. Luckily, we didn't get the big high winds that we had last summer to herald the start of the monsoon at our place that knocked down so many trees. But this was a lot of rain. But I'm not complaining because we certainly need the rain. All right, the Buckmaster Show. 13 and a half years now with our radio program coming to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Part of the growing presence of Bustos Media here in town, we have 5 radio stations now under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. That's where you can get the live stream of the program. And just as importantly, we have an extensive collection of pretty much every show we have done since the first week of January 2011. So there's a ton of content for you with our podcasts at buckmastershow.com. And we usually have those posted by dinner time of the day of the show. The Buckmaster Show live line, when we do our telephone interviews, that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On Monday, we do something we call the Monday One-on-One, presented by our friends at Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors. Got a couple of them in our home at the Buckmaster Bungalow. Beautiful work that they do at Moe's. Of course, Moe's a fantastic photographer, so they're selling his work at the gallery, and where they really excel, picture framing. And if you don't want to put the piece up on the wall yourself, call Moe. He'll make house calls, make sure it goes up just the way you want it. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and they're right next to Copenhagen. And Monsoon Chocolate is now in that little shopping center there, Midtown Shopping Center. They also have a great website, moesgallery.com. Our Monday one-on-one guest this week is Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor, Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of Arizona, where she studies what happens in our brains when we experience grief. She's the author of the best-selling book, The Grieving Brain, which explores what scientists know about how our minds grapple with the loss of a loved one. Mary Frances, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Tell me a little bit about what happens, generally speaking, to our brains when we are in the midst of a grief.
When we lose a loved one, you don't think of it this way, but we have to update our understanding of everything about our world. Our loved one, if it was someone we lived with, if it was someone who supported us, they're wrapped into every experience we have through the day. You think of how many times, you know, you might text a loved one reach out to talk to someone. And it means that the brain now has to predict their absence instead of their presence. And that's actually remarkably difficult to do.
I have been so transparent, and I'm glad I have been, about what Anne went through, being diagnosed a year ago, a couple of weeks ago, getting the news that she was going to die. She had a terminal cancer, an inoperable cancer. So my grief is at about 1 year. Mm-hmm. She lived for 10 more weeks and then died August 17th. But I've been in the midst of building a new person. Mm-hmm. And when Anne died, or even before that, because I knew she was going to die, I felt, Mary Frances, half of me was dying.
Mm-hmm. And that probably is a lot the way the brain represents our relationships. So interesting, the brain, of course, has this understanding of me, myself, you know. It also, of course, has an understanding. It encodes the people in our lives. But it seems that when we are closely attached to someone, the brain actually represents we, the mm-hmm. us, mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. And so when that loved one dies, the brain has to figure out, where is part of us? Mm-hmm. Where is that part of me? And many people describe it feels like a piece of me is missing, mm-hmm. possibly because that is in part how the brain understands our relationships.
Yeah, because we often refer to our spouse, as Mary Frances, as our better half. Mm-hmm. So it's already ingrained in the brain that there's another half out there.
Yes.
And so how does the chronology work then? How do you rebuild the shattered pieces? How does the brain go about doing that?
Well, fortunately,
and it doesn't. I would assume, at least from my own experience, this isn't going to happen overnight.
This is not going to happen overnight. You know, I think it's interesting to think of grieving as a form of learning. We have to understand the person is gone, and we also have to understand how to live our life now. And both of those are learning processes. Fortunately, the brain is there to help us learn. So the brain does understand how to take in the new information. Oh gosh, when I pick up the phone, they're not at the other end. And by picking out new pieces of information over and over and over again, it will learn. So what's interesting is it's not so much that time heals, although it takes time, but experience heals. So new experiences that unfold over time. And that means that we have to allow ourselves to have new experiences that include the fact that our loved one is gone.
It's a building process, and I've heard in my journey over and over again from grief professionals who say, Bill, let the grief wash over you. Because every time that little, if it's a tidal wave or even gets to kind of little wave, it is a learning experience. And I guess when we're talking about the brain is rewiring when that's happening.
That's exactly right. People don't necessarily know this, but grief almost always comes in waves. In one way, that's how it's different from depression, which is sort of ever present. But
yes.
Grief actually comes in waves. People will sometimes be afraid to let themselves cry, because they'll think, well, I'll never stop crying. But that's mm-hmm. just not how grief works. Mm-hmm. It does come in waves. And that is probably enabling our brain to re-understand the world around us that does have this painful aspect to it, but also has so many other aspects to it that the brain learns to balance both the grief and the joy we can find in life.
And this is not something that you're just... This is documented. Tell our listeners a little bit about how you are able to determine these things, Mary Frances O'Connor.
So the very first neuroimaging study of grief was done here at the University of Arizona and published in 2003. And so in that study, we had grieving people who are bereaved, bring us a photograph of the person who had died. And then we matched that photograph with a picture of a stranger. Mm-hmm. And when they were lying in the neuroimaging scanner, in that MRI scanner, we showed them photographs, the photo of the person they'd brought that had died, and compared that to the brain activity that's happening when you look at a stranger. So we weren't interested in just how does the brain react to a person, but how does the brain react to this person that you're grieving for? And so we're actually able to see what regions of the brain are activated and how do the patterns of activation change across that scan, which helps us to understand a little bit more about how it works mechanically in the brain. I think many people find it validating to know there is a mechanical process,
yes,
a physiological process,
yes,
going on.
And there are health implications that I want to get into too, and we might get into that after we take the break. But you did some research that when about blood pressure, this is really interesting, that when the person grieving would be talking about their loss, there was a noticeable change in their blood pressure. And from a personal point of view, I find this not surprising at all, Mary mm-hmm. Frances.
Mm-hmm.
But this happens.
Yes, absolutely. So we knew before we did this study here in the psychology department, from previous research, we knew that sort of your average 24-hour blood pressure goes up in the first 6 months after a death. And that, of course, has health implications for people. But we were curious, well, is it the same across all 24 hours? Or is it that during those waves of grief, we see the greatest increase? If it's sort of a wave of grief for your body as well as your mind, yes, and your heart. And so we had people tell us about a recent grief experience they'd had, and we were measuring their blood pressure at the same time. Mm-hmm. What's fascinating is we saw that the people who came in with the most severe grief had the greatest rise in their blood pressure.
The spike.
Yes, the spike that happened during that grief experience. This gives us an inkling that we might be able to predict or maybe discover the people who are at highest risk for some of the heart health problems.
Because there are dangers, you know. I mean, we can't sugarcoat this, that this is proven that in the first, I don't know, 3 to 6 months, there is a real critical area here. I think they've called it like a widower's syndrome or whatever it is. There are some serious implications to the health that you have to be very careful about.
That's exactly right. You know, we say dying of a broken heart,
yes,
but that is actually a real thing.
It is.
And what we know from very large studies, studies in Finland of a million people, that the risk of dying of a heart attack goes up in that first 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in men, in both men and women,
yes,
but in men in particular, and so much so that we can now comfortably say, not comfortably, but I mean, mm-hmm, reliably say,
yes,
that if a man's wife dies in that first 3 to 6 months, well, in that first 6 months, his chance of having a fatal heart attack himself is almost twice as high as a married man during that same period of time.
Yeah.
That's an incredible risk factor.
It is.
Twice.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
The good news is that for those that do survive, and that a lot of the health systems start to go back to more of the baseline before the grief, and I want to get this correct, in that 1 year to 18-month period. Is that about right?
You know, I will say there's wide variability,
sure, but
right?
Generally,
yeah.
Things.
So when we look at across all people, mm-hmm, we actually even see starting to return to baseline in 6 months,
okay,
for the physiology.
Yes.
Now that doesn't mean anyone is done grieving in 6 months.
No.
But if you think of your body as sort of like a rubber ball that gets squished, mm-hmm, right in that early period of grieving, it starts to expand, as you said, mm-hmm, sort of physically, maybe before even emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see is that our systems start to re-regulate. Our mm-hmm brain understands, oh, I'm not going to see them every time I wake up in the morning, and I have to figure out how to grocery shop without them and all those things. And so our physiology starts to re-regulate, and then that helps us, I believe, to emotionally re-regulate.
Yeah, good point. All right. Mary Frances O'Connor, our Monday one-on-one guest, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge. Moe'sGallery.com is their website. More with Mary Frances O'Connor from the University of Arizona right after this. And by the way, she is the author of The Grieving Brain, which is a very critically acclaimed book. And the new book will be titled?
So in the spring of 2025, there will be a new book called, mm-hmm, The Grieving Body.
Grieving Body. Look forward to that one. All right. Be right back with Mary Frances O'Connor. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's our Monday one-on-one fascinating conversation today with Mary Frances O'Connor, Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of Arizona, where she studies what happens in our brains when we experience grief. She's the author of The Grieving Brain, which explores what scientists know about how our minds grapple with the loss of a loved one. Our Monday one-on-one is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge. Mary Frances, getting back to the health aspects, there's also something that's called kind of like a brain fog. The brain is working overtime, so it's only natural sometimes that the brain's trying to sort some things out, and we may forget not only where the keys are, but, gee, did I write that check already?
Mm-hmm. That's right. The brain fog that happens during grieving is a real thing. What's interesting is that it happens a little bit differently for different people. So as you say, people find it in different areas. Some people can't remember something, or some people can't concentrate as they're trying to do their taxes mm-hmm. or something. So what's notable about this is, for the most part, it's what we would call it's a functional issue, meaning the brain seems to be doing a lot of work to understand how things work now. And it's almost like your computer is doing a bunch of updating in the background, which makes it hard to write a Word document or something. But fortunately, for the most part, that's not a structural problem. You haven't had an insult to the brain that you will never overcome. Mm. Most people find that those changes in their concentration reduced over time, they get mm-hmm. back to feeling more their normal self. Mm-hmm. Of course, if one is experiencing that for a long period, you know, say more than a year, of course, that's always worth getting checked out. But for the most part, it's sort of a functional problem where our brain is doing something else.
And you should keep up with all your doctor appointments. Some people would say, well, oh, I just don't even want to deal with it right now. But just go ahead with, you know, if you're supposed to see the dentist in 6 months, or if you're going, used to go every 4 months, don't suddenly wait a year.
That's right. I mean, it's a risky
period. Your heart doctor.
That's right. That's right. We know that this is a riskier period for your health, so it's time to get your annual checkup.
Sure.
And many people who've been caring for a loved one who's died, they've kind of put off all their
Definitely.
Own medical care, right?
Definitely.
Have you been for your mammogram? Have you been to your dentist?
Yes.
Now is the time to go so that any problems that might be emerging, they can treat right
yes.
now.
One area I'm fascinated by, and I want to hear your input on it, men die normally. Seven out of 10 men specifically will die before the wife. How do men handle this grief, loss of a spouse, differently than a woman would, a widow?
Yeah, we find that
there are differences.
There are differences, and some of those also have what we would call cohort effects, meaning that men who were raised in, say, your generation, Bill, mm-hmm. might react differently than men raised today mm-hmm. or raised in my generation.
Okay.
So what we can see is that in many couples, women are in charge of the socializing. They keep the social calendar. Mm-hmm. They reach out for birthdays
yes.
and all that. And when that person is gone, men suddenly have to develop the skill mm-hmm. of reaching out to friends, of mm-hmm. planning what I'm going to do this weekend, mm-hmm. because we know loneliness is mm-hmm. a real problem for mm-hmm. widowers. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that women are often also the keeper of the health behaviors.
Yes.
So they're the ones that make sure there's salad with dinner.
Yeah.
They're the ones that make sure the doctor appointments are made. And so here again, widowers really have to take on these skills.
Start, become a manager for your home.
That's it. Exactly.
I mean, the grocery shopping.
Yep.
The property, who's going to take care of the,
yeah,
the pool or this,
right.
or what about this,
yes.
this issues outside. It's a whole new way of looking at things.
Yes, absolutely.
And so that is there any advice that you would like to give some of our listeners about the way they should be handling it? Or is there no real template for handling this?
I think it's important to recognize that each person grieves differently because every relationship is different, right? So I think of it, you know, many people will remember the five stages of grief. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross came out with those in 1969. Well, you think how far science has come since 1969.
Yeah.
What we know is that she was right in the sense that grief does involve a lot of different feelings, right? Grief can look like anger. Grief mm-hmm. can look like anxiety. But we know that people do not go through those as stages. They don't go through them in one order.
Yeah, personally, I have found those not helpful.
Exactly.
I'll just be yep. very candid about this
yep.
because the five stages indicate, well, okay, when I get to number five, I'm totally great. Everything's
That's right.
fine.
And that's not
but
really how it experiences.
But basically could be a commingling
yes.
from day one.
That's right. So what we know from much bigger scientific studies now, where we follow the same person for many, many months, is that overall that acceptance tends to rise and yearning tends to decrease. But it's a lot like the stock market. It may always be going in the right direction, but
yes.
there's a lot of ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually very, very normal. Mm-hmm. So when you're in a down, you may think, gosh, I'm not any better than I was 6 months ago.
Because as human beings, we want to fix stuff.
We really do. We really do.
And
this is something that you'll find, I know we've talked about this, mm-hmm. Bill, friends often want to fix it for us.
They do. And yeah. what should people say to someone that's grieving?
I think this is such an interesting question. There really is no one phrase that you can say. Many people will know Jeanette Murray that started Ben's Bells here in Tucson. And she says we should use the platinum rule. Instead of do unto others as you would have done to you, we should do unto others as they would want. So it's really about being with that person in whatever they need. Mm-hmm. Perhaps what they need is just someone to come and spend some time with them and not talk about what's happened. Mm-hmm. Another person needs a shoulder to cry on. But in no case is it our job as a friend or a supporter. We're not there to cheer them up, right? There's nothing that's
We're not, you know, these people are not cheerleaders.
They're not. And it can make a sense of isolation if the other person is kind of expecting you to feel better when that's not really going to happen right in the moment.
All right, Mary Frances O'Connor, the book The Grieving Brain is available everywhere, I guess, right? And the book came out in 2022. It's done very well. And tell our listeners briefly about what the new book will be exploring.
The new book, so one hat I wear is neuroscience, and that's doing those neuroimaging studies. Of course, all of it is psychology, understanding how the mind and the emotions work. But I have for a long time studied the heart and the immune system and how those respond to grieving. And so the new book will talk more about that research that I've done.
Interesting. Mary Frances, great to see you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.
Mary Frances O'Connor, our Monday one-on-one guest, the Monday one-on-one presented by my friends over at Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen. Moe'sGallery.com is their website. Stop by, say hello. They do fantastic framing, and they have all sorts of beautiful art in the gallery there as well. We'll be right back.
Dine-in or take-out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midway point in our Monday program. I mentioned at the top of the program, we had a torrential rainstorm up at the Buckmaster Bungalow. I know. It's like these first storms of the year just seem to park over my home. 3 inches in 90 minutes, and one of the neighbors just up the street claims 4 inches in 90 minutes. Folks, Tucson's annual rainfall is 12 inches. So I received 1/4 of the total rainfall. If the gauge was out at the airport, I would be like, my goodness. But of course, the airport, I think, got a trace of rain on Saturday. That's the way it is. Where I'm going with this is the plants over at Green Things, I'm sure, are very happy after the rain. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, which, by the way, the river was really running. Just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, the 13-acre site has greened up over at Green Things. So their website's greenthingsaz.com, and Zocalo Village, the sister business. They do such a great job, Jan and Jack, hands-on owners, and it really shows. All right, when we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, General Ted Maxwell leads the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. He's the president and CEO there. He has been since 2018. Almost 34 years of military service, including 15 years in active duty Air Force, and an additional almost 20 in the Arizona Air National Guard. He retired as a major general in 2018. How many stars is a major general, General Maxwell?
Eventually, Bill, I'm going to have you figuring this out. It's two.
Oh, there we go.
That's the two. Lieutenant's three, which makes no sense.
I get this all is confused. And then I have my friend, general from the Army, General Jeff Buchanan.
He's a three.
He's three. And he's three. So, okay. Your final military position was Commander, Arizona Air National Guard. Governor Ducey, back in 2021, appointed the general to represent Pima County on the 7-member Arizona State Board of Transportation. Is that an 8-year term?
It is a 6-year term.
Six, okay. You're also the ADOT representative on the 9-member Regional Transportation Authority Board of Directors. And I've got lots of questions for you, obviously. Great to see you, General Maxwell.
It's great to see you, Bill, and I love having papers spread out all over the place.
Oh, yeah, we've got
I think the first topic might not even be amongst any of these papers.
No, we've got papers all over the place. And, of course, I do want to point out that General Maxwell is on the air as part of the Jump In Tucson umbrella of programs. They're doing a fine job there, and General Maxwell is on every Tuesday.
Yep, tomorrow I'll have Jan Lesher, Pima County Administrator, on with me, and it's been a great experience to be on the other side of the mic every once in a while.
Give her my regards. I've known Jan for probably 30 years. All right. The Adelita Grijalva, the chair of the Board of Supervisors, said that, well, she's not at all happy about this whole interstate, this proposed Interstate 11. And some people think, General, that this is they're going to start like breaking ground on this next week.
Bill, I did get a little concerned when I saw that proclamation. They're trying to encourage the governor to ask her to do something that, one, legally she can't do, but two, is I-11 was fought for a long time. It's the Kanamex corridor.
Well, we've been talking about that for 30 years.
30 years. And it's always supposed to go from Arizona border up to Canada. Well,
yeah. Through Las Vegas.
We didn't have anything. I-11 originally was designed during the Governor Brewer area, and it was going to go from Wickenburg or from Phoenix to Vegas. Now, for those of us in the business industry, we're going, that's a one-way flow of money. That's all the Arizona money going up to Vegas and none of it coming back.
Yeah.
So we business organizations worked long and hard in this state to get with Senator McCain and the senators from Nevada all lined up to get the I-11 officially designated from Mariposa Port of Entry through Las Vegas to a yet to be determined departure point at the north end of Nevada. It was important because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about flow and trade. The reason I was disappointed in the Board of Supervisors vote wasn't because they're opposed to Avra Valley. I understand there's a lot of people opposed to Avra Valley, but that's one of the nine segments of utility on I-11. They're not all going to be built anytime soon. There's only one that has even got funding to go forward with a Tier 2 EIS.
And which that's is a planning, Tier 2 planning process.
Correct. And that takes 3 to 5 years to complete. And we're not even in consideration. Mm-hmm. The message it sends to greater Arizona and companies that want to invest in Pima is we're not interested. Yes, Avra Valley, I understand all the concerns from the nature and the beauty of the desert,
the environmental
issues they've got. But when the initial Tier 1 EIS for the I-11 was done, there were nobody proposing any alternatives. The only alternative was to double-deck I-10 or to widen I-10 through Tucson. That would be worse than anything we could do when you call to dividing communities, dividing areas. And it's not realistic. Tucson, Arizona is the only spot on I-10 through a major, and people have got to understand, we're a major metropolitan area now.
Yeah.
A million people, 54th, 55th largest city in the nation. We're the only place between the Atlantic Ocean and the Pacific Ocean where there's not a viable alternative if the road gets shut down. And remember, a couple years back, maybe two now, that when we had the chemical leak out there, there's no getting through I-10.
No.
There's no alternative. And the intent is to take some of the traffic off the one road that we right now put everything on. And one of the biggest complaints we hear at ADOT all the time is, when are you going to do something about I-10? It's not sufficient to handle all the vehicle traffic we've got.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to have an alternative.
And it's not like Pima County suddenly is opposed to it. They've actually been on record since 2007 opposing that route. So that tells you how long this has been kicked around.
It is true. But at the same time, Administrator Huckleberry and others worked very hard to try to find a route that would do. It's tough to find.
Mm-hmm.
But again, to me, the problem I had with that message was you're just telling people, we're not interested.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come down here. And if you're a business, especially a business where you're manufacturing or you're in, we know the value of the port of entry.
Yeah, because by the time it gets to
our
perhaps
region,
people that might want to even relocate a business here, they hear that, local government is not in favor of transportation corridors.
Bingo.
Yeah.
You just nailed it right on the head there.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've had a conversation with a couple of the members of the board, and I've said, if you're going to criticize and say you don't want that, because some of them have said they still believe that we need I-11, well, then let's start looking at alternatives.
Let's talk about the legislature. Mm-hmm. How does this state spending program look to you, the new budget, which, I don't know, it seems like they finally decided to hammer it out rather quickly, but I'm not sure about what went on behind the scenes. Maybe you've got some insight.
Well, Bill, I do think one of the most interesting things about this year's budget negotiations, yes, it happened pretty rapidly.
Yeah.
You know, the legislature had been complaining that the governor wasn't getting serious about it early enough. The governor knew that there were going to be some tough decisions. She didn't want to start having that conversation until they were serious about it. And when it finally got down to it, they had to really go hard to get it through. I mean, they had to make up for the deficit, almost a $1.7 billion deficit. There's concerns about if that will be an ongoing deficit or is it something that in a couple years after the stabilization of the tax changes and the tax rates, you know, maybe they were being overestimated what we thought. But it was very interesting to watch them go through this process. The irony of it is what eventually passed, that's why you hear people from both sides complaining about it, was something that had to be a bipartisan bill.
Mm-hmm.
There were no votes from some of the more conservative Republicans who did not want to give up some of the stuff. Sure. They were in there. And all that meant was now leadership. So Senator, the President Peterson and Speaker Toma.
They had to come together.
Yeah. And so they now had to go insert stuff that was more acceptable to some of the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And you saw a really interesting conglomeration of folks that were on the yeses. But mm-hmm. it was a bipartisan. You had no votes from both sides. Mm-hmm. There are some things that I think we should be worried about. You know, the money that Governor Ducey put in under the Water Infrastructure Financing Authority, they swept all $333 million remaining of the $1 billion that he put there. So we know we're going to need some water infrastructure investment at some point in the future. From my perspective on the State Transportation Board, we looked at over $196 million that were swept from the roads. Now, a lot of people, the call I got from a lot of folks was regarding, hey, I saw that they're moving some I-10 funding. And they did. They moved it. It was I-10 funding that hadn't been spent yet and wasn't forecast to be spent because roadway projects, contracts, designs take a while. So they moved it to 2028. So I-10 will be six lanes. We've still got all the money. I don't want anybody, mm-hmm. and we don't want people panicking that we don't have the money, and it will be complete right now, forecast 2028. Mm-hmm. Long way off, you know, when we're sitting here in 2024, but if you go right now on I-10 and see what they're doing at the Gila River Bridge, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just amazing how many cranes you could put in one really tiny spot and trying to get that done. So we'll get there, but there was a lot of money there. All the state agencies lost about 3.5%. The universities as a whole lost a 3.5% cut. And, you know, right now for University of Arizona, losing any money is more challenging.
Yeah, it is a very challenging time money-wise at the U of A. All right, we'll talk about the propositions with General Ted Maxwell right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Pima Association of Governments, the Greater Tucson Region's metropolitan planning organization, is developing a new long-range transportation plan for the next 30 years.
Shape your transportation future and tell us your transportation project and funding priorities. Take the survey at pagregion.com/2055. That's pagregion.com/2055.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Perfect time of year to go over to Silver City if you want to cool off. And who doesn't? This time of year, it's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson, southwestnewmexico.org, the starting place before you do your drive over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We like to say it's usually about 10 degrees cooler. It can go as much as 15 and even more. So, and the reason, the elevation, about 5,000 to 7,000 feet. So think about it. It's a great getaway. We send so many of our listeners over there. Everybody has a great time in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Again, the website, southwestnewmexico.org. General Ted Maxwell is with us, the head of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, where he's the president and CEO. And your organization really does have to keep a close eye on the legislature, doesn't it, General?
We try to, Bill. I mean, the legislature is, you know, obviously the Tucson Metro Chamber is going to be focused more on local advocacy, and we work real closely with their team.
Yeah, we had Michael Guyman on our Monday one-on-one a couple of weeks ago, and he said the chamber used to go, you know, with the lobbying and everything. They used to be... back in the Jack Camper days, folks remember Jack, they were very heavily into the legislature.
And I think some of that, if you look at when Jack was here and when SALC came into existence, you know, we as we always, and Michael says it too, so, you know, the chamber is the voice of business and SALC is the voice of business leaders. And we do carry a lot more of the load at the state legislature, so we try to stay wind into that. But before we go into the propositions, I know you want to hit those, is we were just talking about the primary coming up.
Yeah.
And the primaries are so important, and I've been pushing that on the 9 o'clock hour that, you know, it's important for us to get involved. And independents can get involved. Only about 10% of them do. But the independents have until July 19th to poll ballots. They can request a mail-in ballot. Now, that's cutting it really close.
Can they call to request?
They can. Yeah. So I would encourage all the independents out there that are thinking about
office,
it.
They would they
go
call?
Through the county recorder's office. Okay. Yeah, they may need to get online and fill out the form to
but
do it correctly.
But very few people do that.
But well, okay. Only 10%.
Yeah,
and yet 33% of the voters here in Pima County are independents. And as we talked about, there's quite a few elections that are decided in the primaries, and it's not just everybody knows about the county attorney's race, but it's also about LD21, LD20, because these are strong Democratic districts that the only voting that's going to happen is going to be in the primary.
Yeah.
Some of them are going to, in LD20, Sally Ann Gonzalez's district, it's all about the primary. Yes. There are no Republicans or any other people filed to
so
even
the
run.
Election will be decided end of July.
So strongly encourage.
The earliest primary we've ever had.
Strongly encourage people to vote in the primary, because that way you can start studying after you vote for the 15 ballot initiatives that it looks like
15.
It's going to be on.
Wow.
The legislature had a flurry of several
15.
More at the end, and there will be 11 that are referred by the legislature. A couple of them are being challenged in court right now. And it looks like there's going to be four that are going to make it.
What are the marquee?
Well, the marquee ones are going to be the citizens' initiatives. The citizens' initiatives, you have Make Elections Fair, which is an open primary system for all officials in the state.
Like they and do in Alaska.
It's similar, but it's really focused on the primary. They're trying to take it to the primary where both the candidates are treated fairly, so they'll have the same number of signatures required if you're an independent to get on the ballot as you would if you're a Republican or Democrat, and all those names would be on the primary, and then you wouldn't have to worry about pulling a ballot because everybody votes in the primary.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be up to the legislature and the governor to determine how many of the people from the primaries go into the general. Mm-hmm. So it could be just a top two type situation where the top two advance.
I don't know if that one's going to pass. Sometimes when things are real complicated like that, people just say no. No, I don't know.
It's funny because
just a guess.
You'll hear from people saying, "Oh, that's the one. That's the ranked choice voting initiative,"
mm-hmm.
and ranked choice voting may be used if the legislature and the governor decide it, yeah. But the purpose is to try to change the primary.
Yeah, so I don't know about that one. What else? Yeah,
obviously the abortion access bill
that's
is on,
huge.
And that one's going to be huge. We know they've got, so those first two, we know they've got enough signatures.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of them filing, so they'll get an actual proposition number. They don't have one yet, mm-hmm. but obviously that one's going to be huge on there. There's also raise the wage. It's called the
what's
one,
that
one
about?
Fair
are there raise competing
Act.
Wage or
There are, Bill.
One, so confused about this.
So one is the Citizens Initiative. And again, we're pretty sure they're going to have plenty of signatures to go. But it would raise the minimum wage by $1 over the cost of living increases in both 25 and 26. So effectively would raise the minimum wage in Arizona to $18 and then continue to have. It also, the biggest change, and this is where you get the competing one, is in that one it phases out the tip credit. So now, the workers who are service and tip oriented fields, they get below minimum wage, but they make much more than that based on tips coming in.
Of course.
And so there is now a competing initiative that was forwarded by the legislature, and they don't have a number to it, but it allows an employer, for any employee who customarily receives tips, to pay up to 25% below the minimum wage. But it requires, if the tips for the day don't make the hourly, you have to go to actually a couple dollars above minimum wage. So those are going to be two that you're going to see a lot of thing in. One is going to take away what we historically know as tipped employees our country. Now, tipping's embedded in our systems.
Oh, yes,
we
it
all
is. Yeah.
Tip. And if we don't tip, we always think about it. So it's going to be very interesting to see how those two are, campaign against each other. But
may just say, I don't understand either of them.
and they may.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Bill, when we get 15 of these at the end, some people get to the bottom of the ballot.
And they just say,
and they just start voting no.
Exactly. Hit on a few of the highlights on the legislative proposition.
So some of the big legislative propositions that we talked about.
Got a little over a minute.
Yeah, so. No problem. We talked about the tipped wages is a huge one. There's also the one that's now in court, and that's the one that'd be 1060. It's the Border Security Act. That's the one that
allows local
1070
police to do some border enforcement.
Yes,
okay,
and that's gonna it's got to get through the courts because it's already been challenged.
That one's a little questionable about getting through the courts, but go ahead.
No, absolutely. There's one that requires citizens' initiatives to start collecting signatures from every county, so it mandates every county 10% of their signatures have to come from all 15.
What?
And that is really one to try to make it much more difficult to get a citizens initiative on the ballot.
Yeah, I would think so.
So I think that one's going to be there. There is one that is going forward, and this is going to be a very political one, is that would allow property owners to apply for a primary tax refund if the owner can document the expenses that were caused by city, towns, or counties adopting a policy, a pattern, or practice which declines to enforce existing laws or maintain the maintaining of a public nuisance. That is targeted towards businesses who are being impacted by homelessness or drug use or things that can be pointed back, and they say the city is not enforcing or the town or the county is not enforcing what it's supposed to.
And they get a remuneration from their
because they're paying property tax, and their property tax isn't being used to enforce the laws.
Okay.
And so that one's going to be
that's going to be
Proposition 312.
All
so
right.
We're starting to get numbers on some of these, and that's going to be another big one. Now, there's a whole bunch of other ones, Bill. There's one that makes an adult convicted of a Class 2 felony for any child sex trafficking to be sentenced to natural life. It's just saying if you're mm-hmm. natural life with no possible parole. And you get one, there's one that will limit how long a governor can have emergency powers. The bottom line is there's going to be 15 propositions. Mm-hmm. Let's say after the courts get through 12, that's a lot of information that people need to go down and really research before you vote on it.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you don't, they'll just say no, 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 no.
That's it.
Yep.
That's what they do. And
all right.
That's it.
General Ted Maxwell will be on the air tomorrow with his weekly radio show. Do you have a guest? Well, you mentioned you've got Jan Lesher, right?
Tomorrow. Jan Lesher's joining me tomorrow, the Pima County Administrator.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot to talk to her about.
A lot to talk about. Glad you're doing well with that show. It's going very well. The whole jump in Tucson brand is doing very nicely.
It's been a lot of fun for us, and it's just, you know, we wedge ourselves between, you know, Wake Up Tucson and the Buckmaster Show, and we try to uphold the standard expected of this station.
There you go. Thank you very much, General. Have a great afternoon. All right, on behalf of General Maxwell and John, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.